Blog Talk Radio.
WHO has plans for Africa and Africans, part two. Tonight we talk about our solution for their plan. We'll be right back. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as I Am Sister Q. And joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Shabaka, who, like me, is a member of GURU. Peace, Brother Shabaka. How are you doing tonight?
Yeah, peace, sister, and greetings to the family. I am doing great, wonderful. Very excited about being here, and hopefully, we'll have a lively discussion and informative discussion. But I am feeling good, and thank you for asking.
I'm glad to hear that you're feeling so well, and if the past proves the future, we will have a very good discussion because you always bring us news we can use. So, Brother Shabaka, this is part two of does the WHO have plans for Africa and Africans in America? Please begin tonight's discussion by briefly reviewing what was said in part one, which was done on the 2nd of June.
Yeah, thank you, Sister Q, for that. And family, again, it's good to be with you. For those who might have not tuned in or you've tuned in and may have forgotten, we spoke about the World Health Organization. And the significance of that is that as it is structured right now, a lot of information comes from the World Health Organization dealing with health as a consequence and being an agency, an important agency of the United Nations, using the member states, particularly those member states whom we might consider a low income or middle income or what have you, taking their direction from most of the European or Western countries, who, by the way, really governs that body and that structure, all right, look to it to provide it with guidance dealing with health issues. But now let me get, as I said earlier, it is an agency of the UN, mm-hmm. and it's primarily responsible for bringing together, you know, the members. I think it's 196 members. There are more countries in the UN, not all of them register to be part of the World Health Organization, although it's a large number. So I think about 196 come together, and their attempt is to promote health on a global scale, maybe sometime regional, all right, but on a global scale because, as I said, it's the World Health Organization. They had a meeting a couple months ago, really towards the end of May. In fact, it started May 22nd of this year. The World Health Assembly met, all right, in Geneva, Switzerland. The reason it was 196 members, as I said before, those countries, all right, they came together, and usually they come together every May, all right, and they come together every May to look at the priorities and policies, you know, for that year, all right, and trying to update. It's like a group of folks who set strategic plans, and periodically they come together to see where they are, and then they try to update it or sustain it if there's no update needed. Well, in this particular session of the World Health Assembly, all right, the United States, you know, that beautiful, lovely country of democracy, the United States proposed 13 amendments to what is called the International Health Regulation. Now, the International Health Regulation, for those who might not remember when I was on last, is nothing but a group of amendments that tends to regulate on how any kind of health emergency, what's the process look like? You know, how is that information gotten to the World Health Organization? And then how is that information disseminated? All right, disseminated, distributed, and what kind of precaution and process is recommended such to overcome any kind of health issues of international proportion? All right. Well, anyway, the United States, you know, brought together 13 amendments, and it must have spooked and scared everybody. 12 of those amendments were knocked down. Actually, they were tabled, and only one amendment passed. Now, it's interesting about the tabling of those 12 members. 47 African countries voted as a bloc, all right, against 12 of the 13 amendments, and that spooked everybody. All right. Mm-hmm. The Europeans were on board because the Europeans are on board with whatever the UN, United States does, or on board sometimes with whatever China does because they're the two largest economies in the world. And right. They receive money both from China and the U.S. But you know, I got a surprise. Well, not a surprise, because I think I told you the last time that the U.S. is not the largest funder of the World Health Organization. But anyway, 47 African countries, all right, put a death blow to these 12 amendments, and that's to be tabled. Now, this sparked you know, some enthusiasm with some countries, some organizations on the African continent, because they took such a stand, all right, which have been done very rarely, but the 47 voted, you know, in the World Health Organization, or the World Health Assembly, they have countries grouped by regions, and the African region is composed of 47 African countries, all right? The top layer, the Arab layer, belongs to the eastern region, eastern Mediterranean region. But mostly everything in so-called sub-Saharan Africa belongs to the African section. And they voted as a unified bloc against these 12 amendments, all right? And and it shocked, and I think it shocked Europe and the rest of the world. So they tabled it for 2 years. And so in their 2024 meeting, they will come back and re-entertain this. This allows them time, all right, to meet with those countries who were opposed, all right, and see if they can get some kind of census, some amendments to the amendments, or in other words, to modify what was presented. That's what you're led to believe, all right. In my own mind, this is Shabaka's own thinking, is that what was brought up is to see how we can bribe the African countries, all right, to make it more receptive. See, one thing about some of our African leaders on the continent, we're not stupid, but a lot of them are corrupt, all right? And so go ahead, sister.
No, I was disagreeing with what you said. I was disagreeing with what you said. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So you know, they're just greedy. they don't want to be, you know, given peanuts. You know, when they can get a little bit more. All right, that's what I'm thinking. But it may be something else. Maybe they have seen the light. You know, that's, we can all pray. But anyway, right. So that's in a nutshell is there to supposedly provide guidance on an international scale, you know, of any kind of pandemic, epidemic, major health issues that might have international or global implications. All right. But that's not all. I'd like you to listen again to John Titus. I played John Titus a couple weeks ago. And John Titus will give you a much better understanding of that organization, particularly the funders of that organization. Listen to John Titus. He is in the U.S., a federal litigator, and he is making this presentation at a meeting, sort of like a press conference, all right, that was held towards the end of the World Health Assembly meeting in May. this came after it was held in June, all right, and he's commenting on the World Health Assembly meeting, which was meeting the same time as the World Economic Forum. Let's hear what John Titus has to say.
Okay.
It came from Wall Street itself, and it came disguised, just like here, as experts advising the U.S. executive branch on what to do in an emergency, the emergency there being a fragile economy, which is exactly what you have with the WHO experts rendering advice that benefits private parties funding the WHO. The WHO website actually admits, if you look at it, that the second largest donor to the WHO is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I'm just going to cut to a graphic. From there, you can see Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is second in the list of donors to the WHO, $751 million, and that is only in 2020 and 2021. That's a lot of money.
That's $751 million in that two-year period, 2020 to 2021. All right. The U.S. only donated $693 million. Interestingly, Germany donated about $1.2 billion. All right. All right. So we see that we got a private foundation. All right.
Uh-huh.
And there's other foundations, a private company and entities are donating to international organization, and particularly the international organization mission, all right, is to deal with and to inform and help find solutions to any pandemic in the health area that might emerge. All right, but let's listen to Titus as he continues with this data.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is donated, and I want to highlight the fact that Bill Gates is on record talking about how he personally profited from vaccines. So I want to cut to this clip and just listen to what Bill Gates tells CNBC here.
You've invested $10 billion in vaccinations over the last two decades, and you figured out the return on investment for that. It's kind of stunning. Can you walk us through the math?
It's been $100 billion overall that the world's put in. Our foundation is a bit more than $10 billion. But we feel there's been over a 20-to-1 return.
I think the numbers that you ran through were if you had put that money into an S&P 500.
A 20-to-1 return. What that means is that he made $2,000 profit. 20-to-1, that's $2,000 profit. Not 100% profit. Not 200% profit. $2,000% profit with his investment in the pharmaceuticals and the WHO. Let me let him continue.
$100 and reinvested the dividends, you'd come up with something like $17 billion, but you think it's $200 billion
here, yeah.
Okay, so Bill Gates has put $750 million in the WHO in the last 2 years, and he's put $10 billion total into vaccines. Query what role the WHO plays in Bill Gates achieving a 2,000% return on his investment. Well, for one thing, the WHO conceals all facts that do not promote the advantages of vaccines. It is basically an advertising agency for vaccines. Take a look at what the WHO says on its website about the Pfizer vaccine. It is quite interesting and revealing what the WHO's website, on their own website, says about Pfizer's vaccine, and we'll pay attention to what they're not saying with this as well. Here is their website, and you can see what they say. The Pfizer COVID-19 mRNA vaccine is safe and effective. Now let's look at what they are not telling you. And you can see Pfizer right down here in the bottom. Now I want to look at what they're not telling you. This is from the Bayer's website. It's a CDC. It talks about the dangers of vaccine. And you find just by a search on the CDC's own website that there are 28,312 cases where the vaccine was COVID-19, of which Pfizer is obviously a big player, and the patient died. So if a vaccine that has killed 28,000 people is deemed safe and effective by the WHO. Now, the other thing that the WHO is not telling you about Pfizer is that Pfizer is a criminal enterprise that has been caught in criminal fraud before. This is from the DOJ's own website.
He's now showing, I'm looking at a video clip. He's now showing on the Department of Justice website where they have announced that Pfizer, all right, they found Pfizer guilty of fraud, and now they are coming into some settlement. He's going to describe the settlement. Now this is back in 2009, all right,
okay.
And Pfizer, all right, has been found to have committed fraud. He'll tell you more about the fraud.
Pfizer to pay a $2.3 billion fine for fraudulent marketing, okay? They're pleading guilty to a felony violation for misbranding their drugs and misleading people about their drugs. They're paying the largest criminal fine ever imposed by the United States for any matter, as it is. The WHO doesn't seem, they don't deem it worthy to mention to you that Pfizer is guilty of fraud in misrepresenting the safety and the efficacy of their medicines. So the conclusion here is the U.S. executive branch has worked for private corporations and banks since the global financial crisis. This MO is to replace the democratic process and the rule of law by replacing it with a rule by private corporations and banks in particular on or on top. It does so, the executive branch, by using emergency and crises to justify all manner of undemocratic regulations. It cites the authority of so-called experts who stand to gain financially and professionally. Bill Gates gaining financially, Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer, their law firm gaining professionally, by advancing their company's interest in the name of the public good and to the detriment of the public. And that's a real problem.
Yeah, so what Titus is saying is that the WHO, just like some agencies, federal agencies in the United States, will use experts to justify, all right, why they do not enforce policy, procedure, the law, all right, and these experts happen to be the same people who they are investigating of committing the crime, all right?
Uh-huh.
So what he is saying is that you got Bill and Melinda Gates involved, you got Pfizer donates to the World Health Organization, you got Gavi. Uh-huh. Now, Gavi is sort of like a foundation similar to the Bill and Melinda Gates, but it's mostly focused towards the development of vaccine. All right, so uh-huh. It does give money to vaccine producers and manufacturers, but it also gives money to the World Health Organization.
Uh-huh.
All right, so you can see the conflict. Now, let me describe, and I think I described it the last time. There are two types of donations that private organizations and businesses give. One is called what they get voluntarily, and the other one is what they call to assist. In other words, all right, the WHO, the World Health Organization, needs money in order to assist to do certain kind of projects. All right, usually those donations come without strings attached. But on the other hand, the donations, all right, that come about voluntarily, what usually happens mm-hmm. is that there are strings attached. In other words, the donor tells WHO how they want that money spent. Now, all right, 80%, not 1%, not 2%, not 5%, 80% of the donations that is received by WHO from private entities, all right, are of the form of voluntary. So that means that 80% of what they receive are donations with strings attached. You got
right.
that, right, sister?
Yeah.
Family,
right.
you got
right.
that. And you're trying to say, all right, Shabaka, so we now know that the WHO is corrupt. So what else is new? The stakeholders are there for their own interests, all right?
Exactly.
Not only are they there for their own interests, they're there in order to make sure that their interests are carried out and under the cloak or disguise that they are serving a global or humanitarian need. All right, so we uh-huh. think that the World Health Organization, made up of members, is trying to deal with the needs of its member states, and particularly its low and underdeveloped or developing countries, they call them. All right, and so uh-huh. it's trying to do that to bring them up, all right, to par. All right, and so, but they're not there. They're there to use as corporations, as a vehicle to further exploit. Now, I want you to listen to this because this is important. This is a comment that was made by Stéphane Barcel, who is, I may be pronouncing his name incorrectly because he's French. He is the Moderna CEO, and I think I may have mentioned this before. Now, listen to what he talks about, and then I'm going to play also after him, all right, the conversation between Albert Bulla, who is the CEO, all right, of Pfizer, and Klaus Schwab, who happened to be the CEO of the World Economic Forum. I want you to listen to these two clowns.
Okay.
Seth knows we're now throwing those into the garbage. It's sad to say. I'm in the process of throwing 30 million doses into the garbage.
He's talking about the vaccines that his company is producing. Now, he
okay.
has a heavy a French accent, but just listen to him. He had to throw them in the garbage. He's going to tell you why.
Because nobody wants them. We have a big...
Did you say that? Did you hear that? Because nobody what?
Nobody
wants them. All right, that's what he's saying. He's the man. He's the head of Moderna. He's in partnership with NIH, NIAID. That's Fauci's organization.
Okay. We right now have governments. We try to contact not only Steph, we're doing great work with his team trying to get demand into the countries, but also we contacted through the Washington, the embassies in Washington, every country, and nobody wants to take them. And so the challenge we have now is it's a very different situation than we had 3 years ago. The problem we had 2 years ago is there was no mRNA capacity in the world, zero. The situation is very different today. Moderna has 3 billion doses of annual capacity. Pfizer has 4 billion doses, that's 7 billion doses. And the Chinese don't want the vaccines of mRNA. So if you just take the Chinese population out.
He says that Pfizer has 4 billion dosage. All right. And the Chinese don't want
nobody
the Chinese. They can make their own vaccine. Right, they can make their own vaccine. They don't need Pfizer. They don't need Moderna. All right, so they have enough vaccine to vaccinate, put in every person in the world. All right, but nobody wants it.
You have more than a dose per person, and as we just discussed, the issue in many countries is people don't want vaccines. In the U.S., people don't want vaccines. Around the world, we have a lot of people who don't want the vaccine, as from Steph and Steve are working against. So we don't have a capacity issue around the planet. It is not true. It was true 2 years ago. It's not true today.
Wow, there's so much in it.
All right. Again, if the family is trying to miss this, might have missed this, he's saying that, you know, the mandates that went out, even with the mandates that went out, all right, and their ability to vaccinate a large number of people, all right, apparently, as a consequence of that, nobody wants that stuff. All right, so you have to say, and they're trying to say that, you know, countries are poor and they don't do this. Some people see the effects of these vaccines and know that they're not necessarily safe. Consequently, they're not running out there to try to, you know, put their arm out there. I'm going to tell you something else about this. All right. Keep in mind, now, the vaccine is supposed to solicit an immune response, right? It's supposed to, the immune response that they claim that it's supposed to elicit is to build antibodies. You know where your antibodies are found at? The antibodies are found in your blood, okay? All right, now where do they give you the shot?
In your arm.
They give it to you in your deltoid muscle, which in your arm. And the intent is that it would stay there and that it would solicit an immune response that would eventually, you know, get there. But now it goes into your blood system, right? Okay, so you got antibodies that is made and go and are in your blood system. And you have T cells, all right? The T cells are those, that part of your immune system, they call them killer cells because they kill cells. Now, if you have a respiratory infection, is the respiratory infection in your blood or on the lining of your lungs and bronchial tubes?
It's in your lungs and bronchial,
lungs, right? So why are you getting a shot in your arm? Okay. Why are you getting a shot in your arm? All right. And that shot, remember now, you got basically two forms in which the immune system response is generated. One is the production of antibodies, but the antibodies roam through your arm, and then they got if the immune system sees that a cell is too infected, cannot be recovered, cannot be recouped, it'll go and kill the cell. That's its job. You got T cells, they call T cells, which are white blood cells, all right, will go through the barrier between cells and then get to that infected area to kill the cells because they said there's no hope, okay? But the immune response, all right, of antibodies is in your blood, all right? Consequently, when they put that injection in your shoulder, eventually it makes its way in some people to their blood system, and then what you have is a lot of immune response to taking place in your blood system, and sometimes you get clogged up, which is why they have witnessed a lot of blood clots in people that have taken the vaccine. But then I wanted to point that out because it's important because, see, a lot of folks are not trained to see those things, don't realize those things. They just feed off the media, which is a propaganda machinery, and therefore, they, you know, you can't see everything that they pause, and then the media is also a commercial. So therefore, whoever owns it, it's gonna propagate, you know, whatever they want and wish. All right, let me also play this thing by Burla, and this is real interesting because remember now, Safwan said that nobody wants the vaccine. Check this out.
Right.
Can you tell it to us a little bit more? Thank you for the honor to be here with you. Today we announced that we will offer all our patent-protected medicines, all vaccines or medicines that currently exist in the U.S. or in Europe, to the 45 poorest countries of the world, which is a population of 1.2 billion people, at cost.
Okay, now what he's saying is that all of the patent medicine, including the vaccine, he's going to offer to the world, all right, to the 45 low-income countries of the world at cost.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to charge them a markup. He's not going to mark them up. He's going to, whatever they paid for to manufacture and produce these, and a lot of that money comes from the NIH, you know, because they give out grants. So they didn't have to do very much marketing. All right, it was a captured audience. All right, so he's going to give it at cost. All right, to 45 of the poorest countries in the world, but he's doing a little bit more. Listen to him.
And we also make the commitment that every year, as we discover and bring to the U.S. or to Europe or to the world new medicines, automatically those new medicines will be inserted into the offer of the portfolio that we will offer into these countries. I think that it's really a fulfillment of a dream that we had together with my leadership team when we started in 19. The first week we met in January of 19 in California and to set up the goals for the next 5 years. And one of them was by 2023, we will reduce the number of people in the world that cannot afford our medicines by 50%.
Okay, he's going to make sure that everybody is by, you know, will be able, he's going to reduce it by 50% to make sure you can buy his medicine, all of it, all right? But remember now, the 45 poorest countries in the world is who he's going to target. Guess who he's going to run his pilot to first?
I think today,
Africa.
The dream is becoming reality. So it's really a purpose-driven company, and if you say at cost without margin, or something, you must add a certain margin for research and development, we will not. We define at cost strictly what it takes to manufacture it, and very minimal. We exclude all the research money that took to invent the medicines, all the legal that took to make the contracts, or everything, all the administrative costs, everything that it is sometimes is added to the nonprofit will not be added in that case. It's going to be strictly the cost to make and ship. If I think of all the discussions during the last year related to COVID medicine, I think this is such a breakthrough. And
now, this is Klaus Schwab talking. He is the CEO of the World Economic Forum, which had its meeting the same time as, if people might remember that I brought up a couple of weeks ago, that the same time that the World Assembly met. All right, and he heads this organization, of which Pfizer, Moderna, Moderna was there. You just heard the president. He gave that presentation, that announcement while he was there at the World Economic Forum. All right. Now, this is extremely important, is that when he says, I'm going to give it at cost and keep it low, now remember that one of the ways in which Europe has been able to underdevelop Africa, all right, has been to replace, all right, its own economy. In other words, they bring in and create cheap stuff that the African market can no longer sustain with African merchants. Mm-hmm. All right, Africa is importing its food. Now, why does Africa need to import its food? It has grasslands. It has land that you can put the United States in, the entire part of United States, all right, they can grow there. But it's cheaper, all right, to import the food, all right, even with the supplies and demands throughout the world, there's cheaper to bring it in. So now he's bringing everything it costs. He's not even tacking on a profit. He wants to get the market. That also, remember now, Africans have always used this herbal medicine and practices in order to take health assistance because, number one, Africans could not, you know, and even here, without Medicare and Medicaid, we could not afford the price of the so-called health care system here. But now look at he hasn't mentioned the African countries yet, but now he's going to get ready to mention who these people are.
If you see how many people in the developing world, and here I immediately come in with a question. When we talk about the developing world, whom do you help? I mean, are all countries included? We use the principle, so we are including all the low-income countries, according to the World Bank definition, there are 27. But because there's always gray line between the income of countries, but they are not anymore because they improved a little bit, but still they cannot afford, we decided that every country that used to be low income, but they graduated to higher level, the last 10 years will also be included. That gives us 45 countries, which are 1.2 billion population. 1.2 billion,
yes.
And would you help those countries also afterwards to develop their own production line? What we are going to do, and this is a very good point, but
all right, give them help to produce their own production line of Pfizer medication, all right?
Uh-huh.
Pfizer medication.
Uh-huh. What we discovered through the pandemic was that supply was not enough to resolve the issues that these countries are having.
That's what Safan said earlier, all right? Supply, it wasn't a supply problem. It's just that the country didn't want it. Now watch how he slides through this.
Right now, for example, there are billions of doses of our vaccine, the vaccine that was used in Europe, in the U.S., but it is offered to low-income countries for free. And it is offered by the U.S. government mainly, but also by the European Union.
It's offered by free by the U.S. government, and they don't want it.
Mm-hmm. They're doing donations. So the U.S. government bought for us at cost, and they donated. They can't use them right now because we discovered that one thing is supply and the other thing is to have educated population.
Got to educate them. That means he wants to drive them and get the people on board and get that medication. Now, he's going to sell it to them at cost. All right, the U.S. On the vaccine, the U.S. was going to give it to them free. All right, so now he's taking a proactive stand, all right, to get those vaccines into those countries, all right, and begin to, again, capture the market and reduce all of the markets that was once supplied by, you know, some of the African herbalists and traditional medicine practitioners.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Believe the vaccines is doing well, to have doctors or nurses that will administer, to have infrastructure and logistical that you can store it in every place in the country and not only in the capital of the country. A lot of things are missing. For this reason, given the lessons that we got, in addition to the initiative that is brought and addresses 45 countries. We selected five of them that the governments are really keen to work on these issues as well. Those five, it is Rwanda, Malawi, Uganda, Ghana, and Senegal.
Okay, so he gave you five. They got five countries that they're going to use. All right, some of them mm-hmm. are not necessarily what's considered low income. In other words, they have increased their production capabilities and their GDP are enough, you know, to make it, you know, out of the low income range. But anyway,
right.
he has selected five, okay, and the five is on board, and he's going to get those with that. The reason I bring that up is because Africa, as I said before, was 47 African countries prevented the adoption of 13 amendments, which members felt would subvert, you know, their sovereignty. In other words, mm-hmm. they would bypass, all right, would bypass the sovereignty and just be WHO interacting directly with the health agencies or the health departments inside of each country. All right, now you know you can't have that, particularly in African countries, you know, because everything
right.
is usually from the top down. All right, so
mm-hmm.
this subversion is, I think, pretty real. It's a little dangerous. And how dangerous it is and why people are excited about it, I got another clip, my last clip that I want to play from a lawyer who's been, he's a German-American lawyer, and
mm-hmm.
he's been involved, you know, ever since the pandemic. He was here in the U.S. practicing, all right, then he went to Germany because Germany was being hit hard and people was complaining, all right, because he had taken Volkswagen to court and learned,
mm-hmm.
this man is not poor. By no means, and I want you to understand a lot of lawyers are jumping on board with this. Family, you got to really, you know, we don't get this information, but we need it, and you need to get it if you haven't gotten it before, and you need to try to, if you can, get to your computer to research it and then discuss it. You know,
mm-hmm.
the Europeans mm-hmm. are not just doing this. The lawyer. And this lawyer is going to be talking about a class action suit, and I'm going to talk about what he's talking about, and then I'm going to talk about what we need to be talking about. All right, this is
okay.
Arina Fulmig.
Thank you very much, Evelyn McElby. I'm very proud of Philly for his presentation today and the immense work that he's been doing for health and freedom. Philip, you are a dear friend, and I will continue working together. Our next speaker needs no introduction. He is the well known around the world, certainly here in South Africa, on the African continent as well, very engaged with his work on the Corona Investigative Committee together with Vivian. And Rainer will be talking about Africa's strengthening role in law, justice, and human rights around the world. Rainer, it is a great, great honor to welcome you to the launch of the African Sovereignty Coalition. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Shabnam. This is
the African Sovereignty Coalition is what was sprung up after those 47 African countries are voted against. All right, the WHO, the amendments coming from the U.S. All right, which they felt and other countries felt, you know, would subvert. All right, neutralize their sovereignty, which they didn't want.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Rana, and so the coalition got together, say, there's something going on with Africa. Because, see, Europe
mm-hmm.
was already complicit. You know, they was controlled by the U.S. All right, so they were, and Asia was controlled by China. So it was Africa. Even though they are controlled by both, all right, but they have their own self-interest. But listen to what Ryan
mm-hmm.
Fulmig has to say about he's happy. I mean, you got to listen to this boy here.
He's putting way too much praise on me. I'm very flattered, but it's not myself or any of us lawyers who can do this alone. We all have to do this by cooperating, by first of all getting the understand about the true facts, then they'll make the right choices. That's why we cannot waste our time mincing words any longer. We have to call a spade a spade, And we have to make it very clear that this is not about some people acting negligently and making mistakes. This is about life and death. And the other side is using the so-called vaccines in order to gain full control over the population. I know it sounds like a bad or dystopian James Bond movie, but it's the reality. I'm
Absolutely.
Not saying it's because I had a bad dream. I'm saying this because this is what about 400, I didn't even know that, but Corbin Rodenstein, our manager, told us the other day that we've interviewed almost 400 experts from all walks of sciences in the work during the work of the Corona Investigative Committee. So based on their testimony, we have come to the conclusion that this is not a pandemic. This is a plandemic. It's a long-planned agenda. Probably it's been planned for at least 20 years. 20 years. The concrete plans have been made since at least 2017. Had it not been for the PCR test, there wouldn't be any cases. The PCR test, there wouldn't have been a public health emergency of international concern. And had it not been for that public health emergency of international concern, there wouldn't be any basis for the use of the so-called vaccines, which, as we all know now, are not vaccines at all. They're medical experiments. So this is also based on what Astrid and Sylvia Baron, Dr. Sylvia Baron, told us on the Corona Investigative Committee. We would never have found out about it had it not been for their testimony. In early 2020, there weren't any cases, so they turned to this very dubious and now infamous Professor Dr. Drosten from Charité University in Berlin. He's neither a real doctor nor is he.
The WHO approved of Drosten's PCR test, all right, to diagnose, if you have COVID-19 or been infected with the SARS-CoV-2. The PCR
right.
test is not used, was not made to be used for diagnostic purposes. All right. It's not supposed to be used to tell you if you are infected or not. It only tells you that you have a segment because it only picks up a piece. All right. It's very hard to see pieces of viruses. So you have to put it mm-hmm. under an electron microscope, all right? And then this process allows you to magnify it so that you can make the piece larger, and thereby confirming that, in fact, based on some information, usually some published periodical, all right, that the sequence of the piece that you've taken also belongs to an infected agent, all right? But it never was meant. It was meant to do scientific research, not meant to diagnose cases.
Right.
And he provided them with the cases by giving them his version of the PCR test. Now, mind you, the PCR test is a perfect tool for scientific purposes. That's why Carrie Mullis got a Nobel Prize for it in 1992. But it was misused by Drosten, who should have lost all credibility during the swine flu. He, just like his Anglo-American counterpart, Neil Ferguson, predicted millions of deaths if people didn't get vaccinated. And then our friend, Dr. Wolfgang Wodarg, found out and exposed this to the public that we're not dealing, as far as the swine flu is concerned, with a pandemic, but rather with a mild flu. So based on a complete fraud, this pandemic was created. I have now come to the conclusion, this is my personal view, I don't think that all of the people who are working with us on the Corona Investigative Committee agree with this, but my personal view is that the system itself, at least as far as the Western world is concerned, is completely unsalvageable. There's absolutely no use trying to fix it. They have infiltrated every layer of society with their own people, with their puppets, and this has been done since 1992, since the World Economic Forum, which is not a creation by Klaus Schwab, but rather it's a creation that was, I guess, invented with the help of a CIA-funded program in the United States. Klaus Schwab went to Harvard in the 1960s, and he was introduced to Henry Kissinger, and Henry Kissinger introduced him to this CIA-funded program through which the American foreign policy was changed from, as far as Europe is concerned, from nuclear deterrence to influencing, directly influencing European policy.
Okay, I'm going to cut him off right now because he goes on to say, you know, of the importance in Africa as it begins to stand up against the illegality by some of these, again, that is pointing to the 47 African countries that decided not to vote in favor, all right? So he talks about that, and he even says that because he's been dealing with the South African country, some of the organizations there. In fact, one of Kennedy's organization, international organization, is based there in South Africa. It's the South. It's their African branch. All right. And the young lady that you heard was from South Africa, and her co-host was from Uganda, which an affiliation with Kennedy's organization. Now, what do we need to do, Africans? Brothers and sisters, I'm pointing this out because you might say, well, yeah, that's the white man stuff. This stuff is global, so they ain't looking at white, green, yellow, blue, red. The intent is for global domination and to use various agencies in order to do that. But know how they do it. From the top down.
Uh-huh.
That's crucial. From Titus, John Titus talked about, you know, the CEOs were, and the accountants and lawyers were viewed as the experts, and that you have similar kind of experts, you know, also giving advice to the World Health Organization from the top down. What is Hulu doing? All right, Hulu is building up a base from the bottom up. Now, keep that in mind. It's from the bottom up. All right, how is it doing that? All right, by, you know, it's, you go to our website and then you hear, you know, us talk about, you know, aggravating our resources and all this, but it has a specific plan. You got to redrill it a little bit more. You need to get to the website a little bit more. We are talking about building and developing what we call Hulu-based collective, UBC. The UBCs can be viewed, all right, as a chapter of Hulu representing the national body, the international body, because we are international, all right? Their objective is to be able to, in the locality that they are operating in, learn as much about that, all right, as they can, and then look at it and see if it's seasoned enough for the kind of opportunities to develop businesses and businesses that we identify that help us, all right, not businesses identified to help the European market, you know, because as was said, we, on the African continent, we import food when we shouldn't be. All right, now Bula is trying to import his medicine when it shouldn't be. We got medicine to take care of ourselves, and a lot of the disease that it happens is the con. Yeah, go ahead, sister.
No, I just said exactly. We have everything we need.
Oh, okay. Right, we can develop medicine. I mean, our people have been developing medicine while, you know, while Europe was, you know, on its knees in the cave eating raw meat. So we know how to develop medicine. We don't need European oil-based medicine because they got a lot of the medicine came out of refined oil that they found out also could be used to deal with diseases, all right? And the disease, they don't try to cure you of the disease. They don't make no money to cure. They do it to treat. All right. But anyway, to get back to Hulu, the UBCs are like chapters. Their objectives. All right, or the objectives, one of them is to be able to learn very much about the community of which they are a part. Well, that makes sense. All right, and to that's cultural information that they would receive, economic information that they will receive, and then to begin to set up the institutions, all right, economic institutions that allow and provide them with leverage to be able to begin to dictate to politics, all right, what should and should not be done for the people of that community. You can only do that by creating a base, all right? And that base has to be very sensitive and conscious of your existence and your ability and willingness to help the community develop, mm-hmm. all right? And so with the advent or utilization, I should say, of the UBC's Ulu-based collective, we'll be able to and be in a position to do that. Because the foundation of what we want to do is family-centered economics. And family-centered economics means that, all right, the family gets involved, the neighbors get involved, the community gets involved, the tribe gets involved, the clan gets involved, everybody gets involved, all right, to deal with the welfare. That's both the economics. Now, once you deal with the economics, all right, and you have resources flowing in, you have resources going out to the people, then we can, you know, we have a foundation by which we can deal with also the health, all right? And the health is based on curing people, not necessarily maintaining sickness so that you can profit from that. All right, more of that can be seen, you know, when you go to the Ulu website. Nobody has really looked at that as a vehicle to counter some of the atrocities that have happened and some of the plans that are in the making, all right, to further subjugate us, all right? But now everybody in the world is looking to Africa, all right, and the joining of Africa and Africa-America is the foundation. When I say Africa-Americas, because right, there's more people in Brazil than we got in the United States, all right? And then okay. When you look at all of us over here, you know, we got, you know, pretty close, you know, to 150 to 200 million people, all right, on this side of the Atlantic, all right, to partner with whatever is happening there. But how do we partner? You got to work from the bottom up. Family, keep that in mind, from the bottom up. If you depend on the politicians, you lost. All right, if you depend on the people that nosy up to international leadership, you're lost, all right? You have to have your focus on the people, and you have to interact with the people. You have to learn from the people, because in the people are also some of the access to the secrets that provide you in health, also provide you in manufacturing, because, see, we were involved in manufacturing a long time ago, all right? Mm-hmm. We just been using the Europeans' book and not knowledge of that. They had developed iron and steel, you know, millenniums ago, all right? Mm-hmm. Not just decades or centuries, all right? I used to work at Bell Laboratories, and we used to have people to come there who are doing research, you know, and they're talking about, yeah, these people who in Germany, they got a patent on the processing of steel, you know, back there in the 1800s, you know, they were doing that in Africa around 900, you know, AD and before, okay? Mm-hmm. All right? It's just that when the Europeans came in, he shut down our industry. He shut down our ability to distribute our goods, all right? As a consequence, he sustained his control, which is why we went underdeveloped. We were developed. We went underdeveloped. He stole what we had, put his name on it. As a consequence, it made it look like he was the inventor of everything, but not necessarily. Mm-hmm. So it's starting at the bottom low, introducing the concept of, you know, family-centered economics. We're centered around the family, the neighborhood, the community, all right, and economic development and sustainability of that community as it interacts, networks with other. All right, with other communities that also have UBCs associated with it. All right, that means we work with anybody. The industry that was there, we'll do our part as a UBC to make sure that industry can be rekindled. That's the kind of things that we want from the bottom up. As long as we're looking at the top down, we lose. And since I know that it's getting late, but the emphasis is the UBCs is an integral part in the community, the neighborhood, all right, the country that we're in will be scattered, all right, working from the bottom up to develop the economy to have leverage in order to begin to give some influence, and if not control, over the political and, of course, the health avenues that we currently see that are not operating in the best interest of us right now. Well, sister, I hope that I guess nobody wanted to answer any questions, or maybe I just talked too much.
No, nobody nobody put their hand up. I think your subject matter is so engrossing. It's like we don't want to interrupt. We want to hear what you're saying, because you're giving us information that we don't get elsewhere, to be honest. So we want to thank you for that. And we want
thank
to thank
you, sister,
everyone
for the opportunity.
My pleasure. We want to thank everyone who joined us this evening. You can join us again next Thursday evening, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, for another installment of Dare to Win. Brother Shabaka, I know you haven't exhausted the subject, so we expect you to be back, keeping us abreast of what's happening.
Thank you, sister. I appreciate the invitation to come back.
Okay. And with that, I will say peace.
Peace.
From Arrested Development, and I come here tonight to give thanks to the rain. So brothers and sisters, please put down your umbrellas. You won't be needing those today. Look to the clouds with the most rain coming from it. For without the rain, there's no me and there's no you. I said a drip drop, drip drop, viva, bum, bum, bum. Drip drop. Let it rain, let God's water feed me. The water of life, mentally rinsing me. Physically drenching me, most are frowning upon your arrival, but I need you for survival. And when you fall in my community, yeah, I run outside to properly greet you. Let it rain, take my pain, I'm glad to meet you. Fill my eyes with a colorful rainbow. Every drop that hits me fills me with unmeasurable and minor security. Knowing my God acknowledges me as this each drop of rain is aimed toward me. My Lord, thanks for life. My Lord, thanks for life.
Thank you,
yeah.
My rain.
It's rainy revolution. It's rainy solution. It's rainy revolution. 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 Struggle, is a ghetto. The rain, the time I feel is mental. The goal of this rain, I feel is spiritual. Saw through the eyes of the afflicted people. The eyes are hard as a million tombstones. Marked with the names of the millions of kin thrown to the dust that gave them their color skin. Fade to black is the scene they're embalmed in. The rain, many nights have witnessed her. Receiving the sperm of a brother into a sister. Blessing that life to guaranteed existence. A conscious baby for a black resistance. I feel the rain enhances the revolution. It reminds us of a spiritual solution. It reminds us of an unnatural, supernatural solution.
Psychology. 1990s mentality is described by the Honorable Truth Message, which is, true knowledge is so priceless, which is so true. Rain, rain, stay here. Woo! Love that power, brothers and sisters. Ha ha! Raise your hands up high and let me see the colors of your beautiful skin. Now the ceremony begins. Lord, let the heavenly rain cleanse. Run into your nearest rainbow to grab hold to ride on. Each color, learning the importance of each color. Oh yeah. Let it rain.